Jesus didn't have a problem with people that's in the streets. He had a problem with religious people.
How can I help anybody when I was not even able to help my own son?
I would never do that. I would never do that. And I became that in a matter of minutes when they took my pain pills away.
And I said, I'm not where I want to be, but thank God I'm not what I used to be.
This is Faith in Your Recovery. I am Randy Davis. Welcome to the battle. We are excited to have you with us today. Thanks for your time. Thanks for joining us. We know we're going to have something special to give to you, something you can go home with or be at home with later that you didn't have when you got started with us here today. It's going to be a good time. Make sure you go ahead and follow up, you subscribe, you like, shoot us a question or a comment during our program today. Being live, we'll respond to that to the best of our abilities. We want you to feel a part of this, and we want to give you what you need. So make sure you get together with us. Our guest today, good friend Jake Martz. Welcome, Jake.
Hey, thanks a lot, man. Thanks for having me.
It's great. Tell us, let's begin. Tell us who you are. Tell our listeners who Jake Martz is today, and then we'll go back and look at the old Jake.
All right. So I'm the director of Substance Use Prevention Services at Jay County Drug Prevention Coalition.
What's that mean?
Well, so it's kind of a detailed answer, man. But like a lot of people think that prevention services is like just say no or don't do drugs or dare or this is your brain on drugs. And what I've learned over the past few years, man, is that prevention is more about a shift in culture. So what we do where I work is we try to impact the culture. We try to impact messaging and bring reality and perception closer together because we find that they're pretty far apart. And we also try to meet people where they're at and give people skills and tools they need that we find are imperative to not experimenting with substances later on in life.
So help me out with this. Correct me if I'm wrong. You're talking about wanting to impact the culture. I'm going to guess that's the addiction recovery folks we're talking about with that. Is that accurate?
No.
Oh, good.
No.
Go ahead and straighten me out.
I want to impact the whole culture, man. So we're going to dive right in, bro.
Go.
So here we go. With my journey in faith, it didn't start until about 6 years ago. And as things began to click for me, I had already been in a prevention job. I was in a recovery job and landed into a prevention job. And then my kind of my faith journey, really things started to click for me. And I started to figure out that Jesus was a culture shifter. It was kind of his whole deal, man. He walked, 33 years and shifted culture.
Everywhere he went.
Everywhere he went, dude. He was correcting the culture and in such a kind way, too. And when we think about substance use recovery, we're talking about people who have been impacted by substances or something's happened in their life. They don't want to feel their feelings or it's just like a generational thing or whatever. And they get stuck onto a path and they have to get off and you got to learn skills and find community and build boundaries and all that kind of stuff. But then we start looking back and we start to look like, okay, how do we prevent this from happening in the first place? And we find that the age of first use on average is like 10 years old. So you got to get into schools and you got to start telling kids like, hey, drugs are bad. And you tell them all the bad things about drugs and you hope that they make good choices. But what we're actually identifying is that the culture in and of itself is so impactful that if we can just teach people how to interact in a more meaningful, in a more intentional, in a kind way, in a compassionate way, and just honestly, how to love people like Jesus did, people start to feel seen and valued and cared for in such a way that all of the skills and the natural, like the innate tools they need to impact substance use further on in their life, all of those things begin to fall away because they've just naturally received the care and the compassion early on. So we found that just a shift in the culture is what's needed, and that's the type of programming we look to do.
Well, Jake, what did your life look like prior to that step of faith that's brought you in the relationship with Christ? Tell us about those dark days of struggle and just, yeah, who Jake was.
Mm. So as a young child, I've always been a big dude. So as a young child, I was a much bigger dude. And, you know, that caused some ridicule, and I got made fun of a lot in school. And I figured out pretty quick that if I just kind of jumped on the like the class clown train, and I was like ahead of the curve as far as like trying substances and being like the cool guy, I didn't have to feel those feelings. And I really liked being able to avoid actually doing some real work to feel those feelings when I was like, oh, this is the cheat code. You know what I mean? So that started with like stealing cigarettes and
how old were you at this time?
Oh man, I want to say 10, okay. 11.
Close enough.
Yeah, we would steal cigarettes from Floria's Market down on 27th and Lincoln Boulevard, and we'd go smoke behind the shed, me and my buddy Chris Earhart. And I started stealing cigarettes then, but that kept people off my back. So I'd be supplying cigarettes at school. And that's what I became known for, because prior to that, I was known for, like, my size, my weight, became really uncomfortable in my own skin, man. Didn't really know how to deal with that. I didn't like the way I looked, didn't like the way I felt when people talked to me about that. And instead of doing the real work, man, I figured out, like, a cheat code, you know, like a workaround, just be the cool guy.
So how long did that persist before you moved into something heavier as far as drugs went?
Well, I mean, I started with pot in high school. Everybody was smoking pot in high school, so I did that. But I got a job in 99. I got a job at Peyton's Northern. It's like a warehouse for Kroger, and they had you doing piece rates. So in the middle of the night, it was third shift, they had me running up and down the aisles picking boxes and putting them on a pallet and whatnot. And like I said, I've always been a bigger dude, so if you ever see me running, bro, don't ask a question, just turn around and run with me. So I ain't interested in doing that kind of physical exercise, you know what I'm saying? So I wasn't making rate, I wasn't doing fast enough, and I hooked up with some guys there. We first started experimenting with methadone wafers. We had a circuit. We would go, we would get methadone wafers from the methadone clinic. And then after that, it turned into cocaine. And then that just got way too expensive. And then I figured out meth was way cheaper and it lasted way longer. And that was, man, that was the ride. It started around 2000.
Okay. We've got a question, Jake. Let's have Eric share that with us and we'll give it a shot.
Yeah. Will wants to know, what are the practical ways you were trying to shift the current culture?
Good question.
It's an excellent question. So there's two answers to that. Practical ways at my job have to look different than practical ways in my personal life. My job, I don't work at a faith-based job. So I've had to figure out how to intertwine my faith with my work. And there's really only one practical way, dude. And in all interactions we have with human beings, in all interactions, we have to act like Jesus. Just act like Jesus. That's the most practical way. If we think about the way Jesus treated people, the way Jesus interacted with them, Jesus began interactions with people by seeing the person who God meant them to be, right? So like God breathed life into a human being, all human beings, not just in Indiana, not just in the United States, but like the globe and the universe, all human beings, God breathed life into them. And Jesus interacted with them based on the knowledge that he was looking to that person, not the clothes they were wearing, the way they smelled, the job they had, the words they used, the ideology they had, the political party they vote for. Jesus spoke to the person God meant them to be. So if you can consider that as a practical step, if we use that behavior when we interact with everybody, whether in your professional life or your personal life, that's a good fundamental routine to get into. When you speak to people in that manner, they begin to feel seen, valued, and heard. And because of those things, you can start to form a relationship. So professionally speaking, practical steps for prevention would be building a relationship first and then letting the conversation come to you naturally. And then from that, you're given tools. We have skills and tools that we're given in our trainings, motivational interviewing, ethics training, and things like that. And you follow those rules. But I think your fundamental first step is just to treat people like Jesus did, man. It's very simple. And in personal life, I go on more into the like the faith nature of that conversation.
You can get the witness and testimony in there where you can't, the same as in your professional life. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
Well, hey, got another question already. Well, thank you for tuning in again. Thank you for the question.
Yeah. This actually turned into a two-parter.
All right.
Have you ever had any drug charges? And then do you have a college degree for your profession?
Okay. I've never had any drug charges. One of the ways God has been very merciful with me is I should have had, like, I should still be in prison. I was never caught for the things that, for the drug charges I should have had. I was trafficking from Michigan to Florida and back up to Michigan. I should still be in prison for that. So no, I don't have any drug charges, and no, I don't have a college degree. I graduated high school. Randy and I were just talking about street cred. That's probably where all my knowledge comes from. And the older I get, the less relevant it becomes. So I got to ask a couple of my buddies, you know, how to become more relevant and how to have more street cred. But
why do you think I have you here today at my age? All right. Yeah. I need that. I need that knowledge.
Yeah, this is why I hang out with Zach Dodd too, man. Yeah, he keeps me relevant, you know, it keeps me up on game.
He's got that youthfulness going for it.
Yeah.
For sure. Yeah. Yeah. So, all right. What was it that caused you to step in the Jesus direction? You alluded to your faith. What was that lights on moment? What was that like? Help us out.
Sure, dude. So that's a much bigger story than the question. I was going to a Christian school when I was a young man. My parents thought that I think the solution to some of the problems I was having in public school were to put me in a private school, private Christian school. And I actually, the problems got worse there. I was bullied relentlessly, just relentlessly. My parents didn't have as much money as the other people there, so that kind of played into it. Politically speaking, my family fell on the wrong side. My locker was set on fire. I was spit on. My lunch money was taken every day. So the Christian school experience that I had really pushed me away from God hard. I took a hard left turn from God. And like I said, this is a much larger answer to the question. But
sure.
Throughout my entire time using substances, I just became addicted more to bad choices than drugs, honestly. I'd get high on anything. But man, if there was a bad choice to be made, I was making it. Multiple marriages, multiple divorces. Had some kids with my first wife, lost some jobs, lost some cars, lost my license. So I just got addicted to bad choices, and my story generally revolves around ladies. I've been married 5 times now. So to answer your question, what brought me back to church was a girl. I was chasing a girl, as usual. So as I was pursuing her, she was really good about seeing. I spoke earlier about Jesus would interact with people, and he would see the person that God created, not the stuff they were doing. He would see the person God created, and he would talk to that person.
I always say he sees the possibilities instead of the problems.
So this woman saw that in me. There was a couple people along the way, she was one of them, that saw the person in me that God made, not the person I had created, right? So I was more inclined to hear some of the things she was saying to me or some of the hard questions she was asking me. And one of them was, if I was ever going to be taking the God thing seriously, you know, she knew I was there just trying to get some FaceTime with her, you know, maybe I'll sit by her, maybe I'll hold her hand, maybe I'll get a little, you know, a little glance or something. She knew why I was there. But she asked me when I was going to start taking this thing seriously, and I thought about that for a while, and my church did a thing in 2021 called 21 Days of Prayer. And this essentially, through the week, you get up at 6 in the morning, you go pray from 6 to 7 at the church. On Saturdays, 9 o'clock, you go and pray for an hour. You do church on the Sunday, and you do that for 21 days. So I had come to the conclusion, if I was going to take this church thing seriously, I should at the very least be able to commit to all 21 days of prayer. So I made that commitment. I'm like, all right, cool. I'm going to go to all 21 days of prayer. As I made that commitment, the next day, the next Sunday in church, the pastor said, well, look, we're going to do this new thing where every Saturday, instead of meeting at our church, we're going to meet at a different church in the community. Like, all right, whatever. I've already made this commitment. Hadn't made a commitment for God, but I made a commitment to this. It was like the first step for me. So further on in that conversation, it turns out that the first Saturday, the next church we're going to go to on that first Saturday, is the church that housed the school that I still considered hurt me and pushed me away from God. And that, man, that was a challenge. Didn't really want to do it. Was not interested in going back there. A lot of hurt, a lot of pain. I held the church, I held them accountable for my bad experiences. You know how it goes, man. Like, all the bad choices I made, I had to pin on somebody else because I didn't want to take responsibility for them. So I kind of held the church accountable for that. And that first Saturday, man, like, I made my commitment. So it's 9 o'clock. I roll up to the church. I walk in the doors. I wasn't two steps in the door and I was weeping, man. Just not crying. I am a bit of a crier, you know, but not crying. I was weeping. I sat down in the pew. The thing hadn't even started yet. And I'm just sobbing in my seat. Then they do like a 10-minute devotional and then they pray. And I'm still just sobbing. And I go up to the altar and the church there, or the pastor there at that church, he prays over me. The pastor from my church, he prays over me. And man, just right there that day, I had no intention of it. I was chasing a girl, but I had made that commitment. And right there that day, as they were praying over me, I remember having a conversation with God that I was done. And I was done being upset at the church. I was done upset being upset with him. And that I wanted to do something different. And that was my Jesus moment.
That's powerful. And we've got to get beyond that displacement of anger or all. To me, it's a form of denial. We don't want to take it on ourselves. So I feel better when I can blame it on you. And I liked what you said earlier about you were as addicted to bad choices as you were any drug.
Sure.
So it wasn't just the traditional, if there is such a thing, addiction, but your love for making that wrong choice until you could get that right.
Man, I still don't have that right. Well, I passed 4 Burger Kings on the way in here, and I was like, I could smash a Whopper on that on that drive, and nobody would ever know.
Well,
I'm still addicted to them. Yeah, I'm in recovery from that, honestly.
We've all got that addiction. If I ask folks out there who are listening, put the coffee down for the next 3 days, I don't think I want to interview them on the 4th, no, okay?
No, you don't want to see me in the morning without the coffee.
We've all got that. But, yeah, you moved in a great direction from there. What is it concerning the whole transition of your life that brings you the most joy and is maybe the most surprising of it all? Mm-hmm. If I was talking to somebody who knew Jake back in his early teen years versus today, and they got to know you, what would they think? Whoa.
Mm.
What would get their attention? And I say that and ask you that for a humble answer, and I get that, but it's a very personal question that I think matters.
They'd be surprised at how much I care about other people. When you're young and you're struggling with identity and you're trying to wrap your mind around the concept that you don't like the skin that you're in, you feel neglected. You feel like people don't like you. You have relationships in the home that you feel like people can just walk away from you. You know, that you're not, that you're expendable. You have those kind of feelings, those are the feelings that I had. You have those feelings. It's hard to negotiate how to interact with people. So what you do as a young person, you'll put walls up and you stop letting people in. And man, I said, I had a list for like 25 years, man. Still got it. Had 5 names on it. And if you were on that list, you're good. You know, you'll get the care and compassion from me, and you'll get a buy-in from me where I'll interact with you on a level deeper than just like, how's the weather? But I used to tell people, if you made the other list, you could have fell off the face of the planet. I wouldn't care, man. So if you were to talk to somebody who knew that version of me, they would be shocked to know how much I care about people and how deeply I care about people. They'd probably be a little baffled at my level of empathy, sensitivity, because I just didn't possess it back then, man. Let me rephrase that. I did possess it back then. I just didn't tap into it. I didn't want to experience that.
Too vulnerable, I'm going to guess, to be that transparent about who you were. You still had to keep that front up there. Still in those displacement times. Hey, we've got another question. Let's run with it. Eric, help us out.
Hey, Rick Fox wants to know, when are you going to write a book?
Hey, let me go ahead and answer first, and then we want your answer, because it belongs to you. Number one, what kind of book are you looking for here, Rick? Is it just an expression of what he's been through and the victory that he's found? Now I'm going to turn it back to you, and you give your thoughts on that.
Yeah, Rick's asking because he knows I already got the title of the book.
Oh, okay. So he's a friend of yours.
All right. I don't know, man. Same reason this gave me a lot of nerves driving up here today. Maybe something else people would be shocked about me is the level of anxiety I get about sharing my story or kind of putting myself out there. I know there's a very strong calling on my life to be out there. But man, I got a lot of hesitation, and I don't know how to answer your question. I know it's in there. I know I want to do it. But boy, there's a lot of fear. A lot of fear.
I can't go without asking. Can you share that title that's going around in your head?
Yeah, it's called Marriage Isn't For Me.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. And I'm sure it goes well beyond marriage, but because of the 5 marriages, it's a good place to start expressing your choices syndrome that you mentioned earlier and all that goes with that.
Yeah, man. Go ahead.
What is the one piece you think, other than Jesus tapping you on the shoulder, whispering in your ear, get her done? What is that one piece that's holding you back from that book? And what do you have to lose by writing it? And what do we have to gain by you writing it?
The thing that's holding me back is judgment, fear of judgment. Like
you're going to get it anyway.
Yeah, for sure. If you don't get it from one side, you get it from the other.
Absolutely.
Right? I've had some really, I still have some really strong opinions on both sides of the equations, really bold opinions. And I think just having the courage to put those out there is kind of holds me back, man. Once they're out there, you know what I mean? Like, for it, you know.
Hey, it's just like his podcast. Sorry to tell you now instead of earlier, but it's eternal, pal.
Yeah.
This is
once it's clipped, man.
Yeah. Generations from now can hear this story if they choose to. But that's also the power of it. The impact that it can have in a positive manner, it continues to go ahead into to progress instead of digress.
Sure.
So, Rick's going to be pushing you for the challenge, and if I catch up with you again, I'll give you a little jab on the rib with it, all right? Because we'd love to see that print. That's between you and God. We'll just trust that it happens.
Yeah, man.
What else is there in front of you, Jake? That book's a good thing. Is there something else in front of you that you want to seek out, become a part of, get deeper into? I know we always get deeper into our relationship with Christ, our relationship with family, and there are those other things. But I'm talking outside those boxes, though they're good ones.
Hmm. Honestly, man, they all kind of lead back to that box for me. I do what I'm most passionate about is doing outreach. I want to bridge the gap between my people, for lack of a better term. My people are those people outside of the church. They're the people I kind of gel with the most. I want to bridge the gap between my people and my church people. I think there's a lot. I think there's a lot of power in exposure, and I'm really passionate about being the hands and feet of Christ, and I think that probably looks different for me than it looks for other people. You know, I think when we say that, a lot of people think it's like, you know, as a church, you're just like taking food out into a community and just like feeding some people. Yeah, that's cool, you know. It's meaningful. I think it can be intentional. But I want there to be, I want people, when they interact with people that have a relationship with Jesus Christ, when people who aren't believers interact with somebody with a relationship with Jesus Christ, they should walk away with the same feeling as people during biblical times walked away when they watched somebody or were the person that was healed by Jesus, right? So, like, it doesn't have to be thumping people over the head with the Bible, quoting Bible scriptures, or telling people why they're wrong, or putting somebody's business out there and being like, oh, you know, that's a crime against God, or that's a sin against God, or you're going to go to hell. My passion, 100%, is when people interact with church people, they should walk away and be changed forever. They should walk away and want to question everything. They should walk away and be like, dang, dude, that's so different than what I thought. Church people are judgmental, hypocritical, and hypercritical. Why was this interaction different? That's my passion, is I want both people on both sides of the equation to come together and start to bridge that gap. Dude, imagine what revival would look like on the planet if everybody who said they have a relationship with Jesus Christ began to act like Jesus. I know so many people in a relationship with God, and I know far less that obey him or act like Jesus. But just imagine the level of freedom we'd have from all of the culture, the way it pressures us and the way it molds us and the way we have to accept certain things and like, whatever, dude. But like, just imagine the freedom we'd have if we all just started to act like Jesus. And that's what my passion is, man. Because Jesus acted in a way that people felt him without being like beaten over the head by his word, right? So like, I can't really answer the question because I can't get out of the box. That's where I live. I want all of us to do better at treating people the way Jesus treated them, so that people walk away from an interaction with believers in God and go, the heck was that? What just happened, man? Like, that person saw me. They didn't judge me. They valued me. They didn't care about what I smell like, what I believe, like what I post on my social media. Man, they just like, that shocks me, and I think we need to bring more of that to the table.
I think back to the "What Would Jesus Do" bracelets that were so big their time. I always wanted to create a bracelet that would be just what Jesus did.
Mm.
And that was love. That was, you know, we based our organization on compassion. And it was after compassion that Jesus worked his miracles, that he provided, that he gave food, that he brought healing.
Yeah.
But it always started with compassion. Got another question.
Okay.
Go ahead, Eric. Shoot it.
Can you give us some of your defining moments in sharing your faith?
Hmm. Defining moments in sharing my faith is probably hard to answer. This will be the first time I've really shared it in a group larger than like 8 people, like a life group or whatever.
Is that scary? Is that comfortable? How do you feel about that?
It's a little uncomfortable. Like I said earlier, it's big and bold. And I know that there's some camps that are like, yeah, man, get big and bold and go do your thing. But like, it is kind of scary, man. I'm hoping to become more comfortable in it. I'm hoping to have more defining moments. This is kind of my first step out into that arena. Defining moments for me kind of privately, sharing my story, to continue, you know, I had the breakdown at the church that was the school, and had them have my Jesus moment. From there, I made a commitment to join a group called Rooted. And Rooted was my first ever life group. And that's interesting because it's a 10-week, very intense life group where you have to share your story. And the content is really deep, deep. So I had to share my story in that group. And I saw the reactions for people. And the way people in that group were able to hear the things that I hold in my heart away from people, because I'm like, yeah, nobody can hear this, man. Like, this is going to be dangerous. If I put this out there, they're going to use it against me, or they're going to ridicule me, or they're going to judge me really harshly, or they're going to be very hypercritical about the person that I am. But I put it out there, and I received love. There's a few people from that group that I still consider very, very close friends. So they didn't respond in the way I expected, which really reinforced the whole concept of this new relationship that I was starting to have, right? Like, you know, so I found it to be very reaffirming.
That's important.
And reassuring.
Okay, let's go ahead and kind of take another step on top of that. I know you're now involved with A Better Life, Brianna's Hope, a chapter over at Marion at the River Church. Go ahead and tell us why. Tell us what it means to you. How is it working in you?
A good while ago, my pastor shared a vision to do outreach in a very unique way. And before I had even made a commitment to God, I knew that I was called to be part of that, and I told him that. It's the first time I spoke to him in that capacity. I really feel very strongly that Better Life, Brianna's Hope is part of that unique outreach opportunity. I really enjoy, what I enjoy about Brianna's Hope is it is faith-driven, but it doesn't have to be... it's like faith adjacent. You're allowed to have it. You're allowed to not have it. You're
it's
allowed
not to, faith
yeah.
force.
Yeah, dude. Like, you're allowed to show up however you are.
Faith shit.
And you get a meal. You get fed food. And you get fed life. Because I think that the recovery from substances very strongly mirrors recovery of the soul. I think that's the reason why a lot of people want to put recovery in the faith box. They're like, well, you can't have recovery without God. And you can. You can be addicted to heroin for 30 years, decide you don't want to be, go through a process, be in recovery from heroin and still hate God. You can do all of those things. So you don't have to be in that box. And I like Brianna's Hope because it models that. So it's a unique opportunity to bring a community of people, my people. It's a unique opportunity to bring those people into my other home, my church home, and show them we aren't like the way the world defines the church. We're different. The world defines the church right now as the most judgmental, the most hypocritical group of people on the planet. It's just kind of the way it is. But I like to bring my people in and prove to them that's not an actual relationship with God. That's not what it's supposed to be. So let's show you what it's supposed to be. And what it's supposed to be is we just meet you where you are. We love on you regardless of all the crap that you bring, because we all bring it like a backpack, man. We're all bringing our junk everywhere we go.
And so we all have it. Yeah, well, dude. And it has nothing to do with addiction.
Yeah.
It's just they have it as well.
Dude, addiction to substances in most cases is like a byproduct of something else in your
life
that's not been...
It's the symptom, not the problem.
Yeah. I mean, there's some people out there that's not the case for.
Sure.
Not everybody. But
always an exception.
It's usually the byproduct, so...
Yeah, yeah. What? How is it going? How's the chapter going over there at Marion? You guys have been up and running how long? 3 months?
Started on March 26th.
Okay.
So we've been up and running for a few months, and we're averaging about 45 people. I'll tell you what was really cool is when we started out, you know, I set my expectations low. I was like, we'll have, you know, 10 people on the first night. And that's just because, you know, I'd told a bunch of people. We'll have 10 people on the first night. Man, the first night, we were up around 40.
39 count you guys set us.
Yeah.
So, yes, right at that 40.
So, we were right up around 40. I told people to bring food for 10 people. That was rough. That was a mistake. So, learned from that. But what it really showed me is that there is a desire in our community to find community, right? The opposite of addiction is connection. And people are actively seeking that connection. And I think that's a really big responsibility that we have, to provide that connection and make it safe, right? There's a lot of people now. There's close to 50 people every Wednesday who give us the responsibility of creating a safe location for them to find connection and to learn skills and to have open discourse without fear of judgment or backlash or hyper critical response. So it's just a big responsibility, and I couldn't be more proud to be one of the six people on the team that have taken on that responsibility, and we care for it really, really well. We've got two fantastic facilitators.
Awesome.
Yeah. If you,
awesome.
If you're a frequent watcher of this podcast, Zach and Dania Dodd are our facilitators there, and they have a finger on the pulse of the community. They're very relevant. They're very real. I've learned so much from those two about, how to just be your true, authentic self. I tell people all the time that usually when you meet somebody, you're meeting their representative, and depending on how your relationship goes, you may only ever know their representative. I don't think Zach and Dania have a representative. I think Zach and Dania have Zach and Dania.
And that's
and
enough.
That's beneficial. Yeah, man.
Yeah, what they've got to offer and what they're willing to give is just incredible to me.
Yeah.
And I'll go ahead and throw a plug in for Zach here. He's now back in his Christian hip-hop music. He tells the story of how years ago he was in the hip-hop, but it wasn't Christian related. He wasn't doing it for Christ. It wasn't blessed. And he's already feeling the blessing of what he's doing now and making a difference. And to me, that's just grand stuff.
Yeah, dude.
And I know over the years that Marion's been a true stronghold for recovery with different groups and things that go on there. But I also remember back in the day of the pill mills. And, you know, Marion with her VA attachment, I'm a veteran. I am not knocking any of that. It's simply a fact There were a lot of pills that didn't always get distributed as they should. And then with the pill mill and all that was happening then, they're making great strides, and we're seeing a world of difference. Thanks for being a part of that and the rest of your team. Mm. Listen here, Jake, we're getting toward the end. Is there anything you kind of want to wrap this up with or throw into the mix?
Mm. First and foremost, check him out on YouTube. That's OTG Zico. Shout out. The music is good. He put out a couple of tracks the other day. Randy, are you gonna collab with him? You got a persona, right?
Well, Vanilla I've got G. what I'm working on. I don't think it's going to going to appeal to the ears, but maybe to the funny bone, I hope. Okay, a little different approach will be my collaboration.
Yeah, I'll let Zach know to hit you up, man, get you in the studio.
And as you said, it's going to be Vanilla G, and I'll hold the rest of it until I see if the wife will even let me do this, okay?
Yeah, dude.
Well, listen, Jake, it's been a joy to have you. Thank you for all that you're contributing to the... to the recovery field. Thank you for your willingness, your heart. Stay at it. And just as I always like to tell our folks who are listening, stay in the battle. Continue to seek God's blessing and be a part of that blessing to somebody else. And then thank him for making you that. We thank you folks, too, for this last 45 minutes or whatever. We look forward to having you again. God bless. Take care. We love you.
Yeah.
Stay in the battle.